Let's walk the talk. 7:02.
Welcome to the final 22 minutes of the show. Obviously, after this, the Silver Fox, or at least that's what I call him, Kenny Maestri, takes over and he's going to give us some cool jams to party down to into what is today Heritage Day, and making the day fun and absolutely enjoyable. But up next, of course, also a perennial favorite of mine on the show, and something I'm definitely looking forward to talking about, and that is obviously our literature corner, where we talk this morning about, and the book review is Ancestral Voices Writings, published by City Press during Heritage Month. And our guest is Terence Bell from Heritage Publishers on the Ancestral Voices Project, and I think again squarely falling within the theme of Heritage Day today. Terence Ball, chatting to us this morning. Good morning to you, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Bishop. How are you?
I'm great. I hope you're good as well.
I'm very good. Thanks very much.
Awesome stuff. Look, when we talk about ancestral voices, I guess it's ironic that the show has come full circle. We started off the show talking about ancestral karma. Now we're talking about ancestral voices in the form of literature. I mean, it's key, and a huge portion. Our ancestors are a huge portion of our heritage, isn't it? And that's why it's important to have this conversation today.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I mean, certainly these writings are totally unique in that they represent the works of 186 different authors, all of whom were official Indigenous language speakers.
Wow.
In 7 of the currently 9 official languages, simply because Swatian isn't a bele, did not exist as written languages between 1930 and 1950 when these works were written.
And I mean, you gave us the number of the writings there, 342 writings, isn't it? Who were they written down by, and what do they span? What is it?
Well, for starters, they're actually 891 writings,
891.
Of which 342 have been retranscribed into the current orthography. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the writing in our Indigenous languages has changed since these works were written. And then we are translating those into English to ensure that the stories can be understood by the majority of South Africans. And we have completed translating and transcribing 342 works, which are currently available on our website. But there's a lot more to go, because we're talking about a project that we estimate is going to end up at about 5.5 to 6 million Indigenous language words.
Wow.
So it's massive. And absolutely compelling reading, because we're coming across events in our past that have been forgotten.
No, I mean, it really sounds absolutely stunning. I mean, I'm looking at some of the statistics here. So obviously handwritten and typed between 1930 and 1950. I take it that these are largely looking at the 100, looking at obviously all of these various works, the 342, I think, that I quoted early on, but also giving us a bit of a view into taking us back to the late 1700s and early 1800s, and the oral tradition of over 150 years ago, set in writing for future generations. I mean, it spans a vast amount of people and identities and stories.
Indeed. And I mean, if I may, I'll just read a couple of little excerpts that we highlighted, simply to give one a flavor of just how far back these works go. Remember, most of these authors interviewed the then elderly before writing their works.
Yeah.
So we're talking here about people who were born in the, say, mid-1850s. Now, if their grandparents had been alive, certainly that would have taken us back to the late 1700s. But one work starts, this is Mr. Mabale, whose family we've traced and whose grave I've had the privilege of visiting in Kurulendi, in the far north of Limpopo. He writes, "My clan named Shibongo," this is the man he interviewed, "Njetimani Mafindo of Majongi of Shitiya of Matele of Boja of Makukutu. We were under the Ngugunyani kingdom. So when Ngugunyani relocated to Bileni, we followed him." Now, Ngugunyani is the grandson of Shoshanga. And this is the first time that I know of where we can read the works of a Chitsonga-speaking Amashangana, who was active in Mozambique and then, in fact, came to Limpopo before coming to Joburg and working on the mines in Springs and here during the Boer War. Quite extraordinary. And, you know, we have another writing translated from Setswana. It might have been about the year 1820 or 1830 when the Bakwena killed their chief, Motswasele. At that time, my grandfather, Katumetsi, was a petty chief, a counselor of Chief Motswasele. So this is being written by the grandson of someone who was a counselor to Motswasele. And so it goes on. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. If we switch quickly to Zulu, KwaZulu, the author writes, I heard the story of Nkambamahlanzana and Nkababomvu from a grandmother who gave birth to Bufeni here to Mhlophenkulu near Mngoma. For I was writing, she spoke as I write, and her age is such that she was born while the Pande reigned, but she is about to die. So here we have somebody whose words have been written down that was alive in the reign of King Mpande. And that's why I say, without any fear of contradiction, what we are working with is a national treasure. And we will not find a set of writings telling us about the history, the culture, and the poetry, the praise poetry of our people that stretches as far back as these do.
It's absolutely stunning, and I think one of the key things, I was born in 1982, so you can imagine when last I did history in school. From anecdotally, I understand that there has been improvement around the curriculum being a lot more reflective, but I think that the one thing that tends to stand out for me is how little we know of our history and a full representation of our history. And this is exactly the type of project that we need to be able to, get a glance back into that distant past that would have been otherwise missed for so many people. Is it not so?
I absolutely agree with what you've said. And that's why we're taking this project very seriously, because I have absolutely no doubt that if it's done properly, these documents will be used by our descendants in 200 years to establish how their ancestors lived in pre and early colonial times. The range of writings, as I say, is very, very captivating, very interesting. And we are presenting them in a way which will allow people to see the handwritten edition of the writings, the manuscript, the old typewriter version, the new typescript in the indigenous language, and the English edition. And we feel that these can be used very usefully, not only in the language classroom, but also the history classroom.
Yeah.
And indeed also arts and crafts, because there are many arts and crafts covered. How to make traditional wooden items, be they bowls, be they headrests, etc., etc. So, yes, we are doing the best we can to ensure that these writings are going to become very widely known and read for leisure and pleasure as well, because they tell us about so many rural parts of South Africa that we may have driven through, but certainly didn't know much of the history of.
I mean, I absolutely love it that it covers such a wide range of issues and topics, and that it's not necessarily specific. You know, it's not just about telling the tale of a group of people, say a family or whatever the case is. It is about something as simple as someone obviously telling their oral history, all the way through to instructions on how to make pieces of wooden craft and art and so on. But one thing that stands out for me also is that you mentioned something earlier, is that obviously it's going through a transcription process, and some of the obviously on two levels. On the one end, it's a bit of a translation into English so that it's more accessible to a wider audience. But at the same time, also the way people would have written back in the 1930s and 1950s in, say, in isiZulu is not similar to what people would write now. Is there a difference? Do you see sort of an evolution of language, so to speak, similar to how one would experience it reading a piece of Elizabethan text versus reading a newspaper column now in the year 2021? Do you see that evolution as well?
Indeed. I mean, obviously, the spelling rules have changed, the orthography.
Yeah.
So, for instance, in Northern Sotho, you have XA instead of KGA. So there are those sorts of changes. But equally, our South African Translation Institute approved translators for each of the indigenous languages are coming across words they don't know. Oh. And it appears a lot of these words may relate to traditional items of clothing, etc. Also, we are finding words that people don't understand when it comes to dolosis, the throwing of bones and the interpreting of bones. There are a lot of manuscripts on traditional medicine and traditional divination. And we, as a consequence, we are launching through our Facebook page a program to see if we can identify the meanings of these words. And if we can, we're working with the South African National Lexicography Units. They produce dictionaries in our indigenous languages. If we can establish the meaning of these words, then those words will be included in the next editions of our indigenous language dictionaries to ensure that their constitution, that's a sum of constitutional mandate, to protect our indigenous languages is fulfilled. So that's
absolutely
very
stunning.
Exciting.
So then, in other words, we don't have a, you know, the tragic situation. Look, I guess language evolves all the time. It's a global phenomenon.
Indeed.
It's not just here it happens, but and under these circumstances, it's any language anywhere in the world has evolved, and we've dropped words from the lexicon that we used to use, etc., etc. But in this instance, it doesn't necessarily have to go extinct. It doesn't have to be completely lost to meaning altogether.
Well, absolutely. So there's the words that we're working on. We are also trying to involve the public in identifying descendants of the authors. And then we hope to visit the graves of the authors to pay our respects. But we also hope that we will be able to do a brief biography on some of them. Now, I had, as I said, the privilege of traveling to Limpopo to visit the grave of Mr. Mabale, and I was with his last-born son and his nephew. And he was a teacher. He wrote his two works at the tender age of 24.
Wow.
But also opened a number of schools in the Vende district of Limpopo for Tshivenda and Tshitsonga speakers. Then moved to Soweto and opened two schools in Soweto, which are still open. So clearly, you know, the authors, the majority of the authors were either people of the cloth or teachers. There are some traditional leaders, and there was also the author of the first published isiZulu novel, R.R.R. Glomo. But it's really important, I think, that we acknowledge the work of the authors and try and trace their families to find out a bit more about them, so that future researchers have that information.
And you know, it's a vast, you know, amount of work that we're talking about here. I mean, you know, we're looking at less than half of the collection, you know, being available now, and that the project obviously continues into the future to, you know, transcribe the rest, etc., etc. What is the aim ultimately, you know, with this collection of work? Is it something that will be accessible, where I can go to, you know, you name the bookstore, and I'm able to pick it up there? Is it meant for research purposes, and it's in university archives? What's the ultimate plan?
Well, ultimately, all of those. I mean, clearly, when one is confronted by a body of work as vast as this, I mean, we're talking about the possibly 15,000 A4 pages typed. One has to first understand what the writings are about, and then one can start making sensible book publishing decisions, i.e. do we gather the writings together by geography or within a particular language? Should we be crossing all the languages and pulling out the subjects, i.e. traditional medicine? Do we do a book on traditional medicine that covers all of the languages in which we have writing on that subject? So the idea is, yes, we will produce books. It's clearly a very time-consuming and therefore costly process to do all of the transcriptions. So we thought it would be a good idea to make available the work that we've done, three final edits, on our website on a low-cost subscription basis in order to generate income to invest in the further translations. But, you know, if I may, I just want to point out one of the fascinating facts that came through from these writings. It's a writing that was done in 1939 on the Amabata. Now, the Amabata were forced to leave KZN And it tells us how they made their way towards the Eastern Cape, the Mount Freer area where they settled. To cut a long story short, when Makawula, their king, settled in the Mount Freer area, Juwabi, he sent some men to Gini, what we used to call Grahamstown, now Makanda. Gini was the name at that time, with a guinea to fetch a priest. And they came back with Reverend White. Makawula noticed that Reverend White had no children, so he gifted his older son, Tapai, to Reverend White. Reverend White, when he returned from his period of service, took Tapai, who he subsequently named Bertie, back to England. The author tells us that he married an English lady, had two daughters, he died in 1938, and is buried in the UK. So together with the South African High Commission to UK and Northern Ireland, we are trying to find his grave. Now, you know, that just, when I read that, I was totally amazed. I mean, it's just an extraordinary event, and it's real, tangible history that we are working on. We want to find his grave. We want to make that known to everybody. And I hope that learners in rural areas will be able to read these stories about their own villages and find the same degree of amazement, that is where their ancestors used to worship on that hill. That was the, you know, that was the object they worshipped their ancestors through. It's fascinating, and I know I sound like a priest on a Sunday. So
I'm
the word in edgeways. That is your show.
No. I'm absolutely fascinated, and I'm sure the listeners listening in are absolutely fascinated by this. I mean, just to find out, and you know, Terence, I always say this. I've had so many conversations this morning that you know I could have for many, many more hours. But for people to find out more about this project, to access some of these works and even lend the necessary support, how do they access it? How do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can visit our website, which is www.saheritagepublishers.co.za. And they can look at the writings. We have some open writings on the website. If they click, once they're on the landing page, if they click on Ancestral Voices and page down, they'll see some open writings. And they can read them and assess the value for themselves.
Absolutely stunning. And how can people go about, assisting and lending support as well? I mean, you obviously have a team of professionals actually going and doing the translations themselves and the transcription. But as you said, this costs money. This requires human resources and you know, all kinds of other work that goes into it.
Indeed. Well, I mean, obviously we're using our Facebook page, you know, to try and get people to give us some input on the work that we are doing. And I mean, it has been something of a success story for a minuscule little operation like ours. We started our Facebook page in April last year, principally because of COVID and the lockdown. But we've grown now to just under 60,000 followers, making it the largest heritage-focused Facebook page in South Africa. And we are getting wonderful responses and sometimes expressions of amazement and sheer disbelief at the age of these writings and the subjects involved. Because, as you know, Africa has a strong oral tradition, but oral tradition does tend to change over generations. So suddenly, people are reading about an event that their father or grandfather may have told them about, which differs, because they're now reading it the point of view of their grandfather's great-grandfather.
No, indeed.
It makes it extremely interesting.
No, indeed. Well done on you in your team for taking up this project. It's absolutely amazing and stunning, especially a wonderful way to end, this Heritage Day broadcast. All the best to you, and thank you so much, Terence.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Cheers, man.
All the best. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks.